Religion has many victims, and these are the stories of how they survived. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to The Awakening. I'm your host, Heather.
And I'm your co-host, Tamara. Welcome in.
At The Awakening, we have open and honest conversations about healing and deconstruction, and we are so excited to be back with you guys again this week with a really incredible guest. His name is Stuart Deloney, and he wrote a really incredible book, didn't he? Welcome in,
Yes.
Stuart. I want you to tell
Welcome
us just
in.
a little bit about your book, and then we're going to start talking to you about how you
Yeah.
got to the point of writing the book.
Yeah. Absolutely. No, it's exciting to be here. And this book is really, I wrote a, it's a piece of satire. It's kind of a straight faced, it's almost like a government manual, but it's for the apocalypse. So it's kind of one of those things where you're just like, oh, wait, can we swear on this podcast?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, okay. So the whole premise is kind of like, oh, fuck, I didn't make it. I wasn't raptured. What do I do next? And so it's really just taking all of the stuff that we grew up on, all of the trauma that we were given about the end times and the rapture, all of this conspiratorial ideas, and teases it out to their logical conclusions. And here's a manual for how to survive the tribulation.
Yes.
And beyond.
It's so funny, you guys. And I'm definitely going to put the link for Stuart's book in the show notes so you guys can find it, because I was telling him before we even got started, I was laughing my butt off reading this book. And it really was healing, because if you have sat in a church anywhere, you have heard about the rapture. You have been threatened with those messages. We all had fear. Like, I remember seeing demons outside my bedroom window as a kid because I was so terrified that, you know, I was going to get snatched away. But this is the reality that we grew up in. Like, for us, it was real. It wasn't make believe. That fear was real. So to have a book that does play on it and make light of what was used to terrorize us is really incredible. And I really do appreciate that.
And let's just be honest, it's not just our churches that used the fear of the rapture over us. It was discipline. It was parents. It was family. It was other people. If you didn't clean the house good enough, you know, God's going to come and we can't have this house dirty. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It was like a baseline. When I was reading the excerpts of your book, I was cracking up because I was like, I forgot that my mother used it as a state of holiness and godliness.
It was trauma fuel growing up with that. Constantly. But you're right. I love how you did say that. Maybe it was a good teaching method for them to, like, what, conform us to make us do what they wanted us to do.
It worked. Whatever
through torture
it did,
and fear.
It worked.
Yeah.
Right?
It really did.
It ruled my childhood. Like, in every aspect of it, it was all fear, because we were told not to step outside of the line, you know?
I heard this once. I heard it a million times. My dad would say, bless God, you fear God, you fear man, and you are to fear me.
Yes. Yep. Those were the threes. You got
As
it all.
As he was ripping off his belt to whip us.
Yep. So, Stuart, what was your background? Like, were you raised in the Christian faith?
Yes, I was raised. My background's a little weird. I guess all of us have weird backgrounds, right? That brought us to this place. You know, it's the gift of trauma growing up.
Yes.
So much fun. I'm backing.
I know. So I was raised, like, my dad was very much Southern Baptist. Conservative Southern Baptist. But when I was three, my sister was born, and she was mentally and physically handicapped. And what happened was that set my mom on a quest to try to get my sister healed.
How can
we fix this disability?
And
instead of actually dealing with, like, the reality of things and where we were at in the moment. So that sent me from, like, some moments I was going to Southern Baptist type indoctrination camps. And then the other one, I'm going to, like, tent revivals.
I was
going to
say, you're in tent revivals.
And it was, too. And it was me seeing both of these camps growing up, which both rely on fear. So that was like the common denominator they had going between them. But that was kind of the start of my traumatic formation, going through that as a child.
And can I tell you, there is nothing like fear if you walk into a tent revival.
Oh, my goodness. It's a whole different reality.
It's sweaty and it's intense. Yeah.
And people act crazier. I think they act crazier at the tent revivals and the revival services than they do at just a regular church service.
Because you're falling out in the dirt. Yes. You're rolling around in the dirt. I mean, And
you've
revival
you've got to one up the next person, because you've got to have more Holy Spirit, right?
Yes.
That guy's only barking in the spirit. You know, I'm going to just be falling on the ground and laughing and I don't know, whatever in the spirit.
No,
rolling around,
I remember.
And they would be in church clothes. And when they get up, I remember their shirts being black and them looking and going, that was one service. That was the best service. And I look back and I'm like,
yeah,
really?
they were crazy. You know, I remember though, as a kid, like somebody catching the laughter of the Holy Spirit. And I asked my mom so many questions, like, what is wrong with them? What is going on right now? Right. Like, I had no clue. It scared me half to death. And they're like, oh, it's just the Spirit of Jesus, honey. She's being blessed.
She's
having a psychotic break right now.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I'm sorry, I have to say this. Our youth group would hide ourselves, that we would go into the prayer room and we would stay there until we would be drunk and laughing in the spirit. Mm-hmm. And I was a participant.
Yes.
And when people say that sometimes now, they'll talk about, you know, laughing and falling out in the spirit and stuff. And I'm like,
well,
let
we
me
had,
step out of the room
we would
backwards.
We would do the cry nights. We would do the cry nights where we would have the kids come to the church and play the worship music. You know, we're going to worship and we're going to spend time with the Lord. And that just always ended up being an emotionally manipulative service to manipulate these kids. That's all it was about, was getting these kids to spill their trauma in front of other kids, because that's, you got to use the testimonies, you know, to get other kids to give their heart to the Lord. So you're using one kid's trauma to basically lure another kid into thinking that they're traumatized and they're garbage. It's such a vicious cycle. Like, and when you actually can see it, like on the outside looking in, you can see how horrible it really is. When you're part of it, you can't see all of that.
And so, the other thing is that we search for patterns. Our brain looks for patterns. We look for things that are repeated over and over again, right? Mm-hmm. So for us, it wasn't foreign.
Yes.
It wasn't unusual.
Yes.
It was how church was supposed to operate.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And the funny thing, it's not funny anymore, but if you think about it, exactly the way I was raised in the indoctrinated type of churches, I took those patterns and put them into my daily life and put them into my work life and put them into my mothering life and put them in, you know what I'm saying? And so you could see those same patterns repeated in my life in the different roles that I play.
Yeah.
And it's insane.
It is, but it's conditioning. It conditions you to see the world in a certain way, to where, like, you know, don't look at reality, but listen to us. And we'll tell you what reality is really like, which again, Tamara, like, you take that into all of your other areas of life.
Yes.
Where it teaches you not to trust your gut. It teaches you not to trust who you are. And it continues to just make you either look towards the heavens, towards what could happen, or kind of just navel gazing and being judgmental.
When you go into deconstruction, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes you realize that, and I say this every week, the Bible never, this good old holy book, is just a book of satire for me. Once I was undone in my brain, it was gone, right? But I promised to God, sometimes the indoctrination, I'm like, okay, I got it in my work life. And then I was like, well, now it's in this role. Patterns in that role. And I'm like, oh my God, will I ever get done deconstructing indoctrination?
Yes.
Fuck.
And that's exactly what it is. And you don't realize how much it's woven into every aspect of your life until you're outside of it, right?
Yeah.
And there are just little things, microaggressions is what I call them, that'll just show up. And I'm just like, are you serious? Like, I got to deconstruct that too.
Oh my God. The other day, and it probably goes right along with your book, but I was at work and I was weighing parts in a box, and it tells you how many pieces are in a box. Instantly it came up 666. No, listen, my brain was
I'm leaving this podcast now.
my thing was like, I reached in the box to take one out. And I busted out laughing at my place. I'm like, what the fuck did I just do? Like, what? Honestly, I'm like, I don't believe in it. It means nothing to me. But instinctively, I was like, oh, I can't let that end on that one.
Yeah.
I know it's funny because when we were in church, like we would make fun of people that like, oh, that are superstitious.
Yes.
When,
yes.
When, what is this?
We're afraid of everything.
Absolutely, absolutely. It was just all phobias we were just handed to, and like that's. I mean, it's kind of one of those things to where, you know, I think the ones of us that were the most devoted, and the ones that cared for the Lord the most, what they really gave us wasn't devotion. It was hypervigilance.
Yes.
So that's we're constantly. Oh no, we're constantly yep. scanning everywhere. Like, oh no, Satan's going to be around the corner. Something's going to happen. What's going to go on? How yep. am I going to screw this up? And that's just, it's trauma fuel.
That was me. I was always waiting for the enemy to thwart me in some yeah. way. Like, I just knew it. Like, if mm-hmm. life was going too good, the mm-hmm. devil was just lurking around yeah. the corner, getting ready to slash one of my tires or, you know, do something to throw my entire world upside down because we were poor for so long. So something that big or small, just getting a flat tire would have been so big for us, like such a big deal. And I think about that all the time, how I used to anticipate bad things happening more than I ever anticipated goodness in my yeah. life. Yeah. You know,
when I left South Florida, I moved to Michigan and became a part of Word of Faith Church with the Rhema Ministries, Kenneth Copeland, Jesse
Ooh.
Duplantis, right?
Oof, oof,
Bishop
oof.
Butler. I was part of Bishop Butler's church. But I remember
that's grifter like, heaven.
Yes.
I remember getting ready because they had this great big, huge, elegant ball thing going on. You know, if you got 10,000 people in your church, you got a pretty
oh, yeah.
good divorce group, a divorcee group. So we all dressed in gowns. The guys were all dressed in tuxedos. And as I was walking out of the house, I looked at the girl from Word of Faith that was standing there. I was like, can you do me a favor? And she's like, yes. I'm like, please go to the car first, because if we get struck by lightning, I only want it to be me.
That's crazy.
Because I was dressed sinful. I was dressed ungodly.
Yeah.
I was dressed that if the rapture came, I would not go
yeah.
to heaven. My shoulders were showing.
Oh,
my
no.
collarbones
oh,
were bare.
Oh, no.
Now I know why you go by Jezebel.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah,
my first instinct was to my girlfriends in a church.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was
yeah.
you go first because I'm going to get struck by lightning.
That's crazy.
We were afraid of everything. They just taught us
yes,
to be afraid of everything.
Everything. Yeah. Like, yeah. you know, movies. And I say this all the time. It was movies,
right.
music. Like, I even posted a video on my TikTok today. Like, you know, I remember when they would send those things in the mail to get those CDs, right?
Yes. yes.
And I had ordered them. I was trying to sneak. I wasn't allowed to listen to that kind of music. But I was going to sneak and get these CDs. So
yeah.
I checked the mail every day. And I got those CDs. And I had them hidden. But I was a kid. I didn't know that they would send a bill in the mail, right?
Mm.
So when my dad found out that I had had those CDs and I had the devil's music, he was so mad and he destroyed all that stuff, right?
Yeah.
And I laugh when I look back on it now, but you know, how sad is that? That it was literally Ty Herndon and Alanis Morissette. Like, I'm thinking about the music that I was listening to. It wasn't
slope.
Even really bad stuff, right? But at the same time, I was going to hell for that.
Yeah.
You weren't singing Juvenile? I walk with a limp, cause my...
No, I was allowed to sing like Hosanna Integrity. And then when DC mm-hmm. Talk came out, oh, I ate that up because that was the coolest Christian music I was ever able to get my hands on, you know?
Yeah.
And that was really out of the box for what my parents would let me listen to, was being mm-hmm. able to listen to DC Talk.
And ours was not even, we were not allowed to listen to Christian secular music or like Christian...
Yeah.
pop
yeah.
music or anything.
Yeah.
So,
oh,
and so the farthest I got was...
It was too secular?
Yes. Yes.
So what I got stuck raised on is the old rugged cross.
Yes. And I mean...
Oof.
So what led you, you know, I know you went on to become a pastor, right?
Yes, absolutely.
So yeah, what led you to going from being a pastor to deconstructing?
It kind of felt like, I mean, even going back to being raised in the situation I was in, I started to begin to see in these two different camps, if you're around a bunch of this enough, I started just getting like a kind of a BS detector.
Yes.
In it, because you start to see inconsistencies in people.
Yes. Over
and
over.
Yeah, you would see it, and so I, even though like my mom would never see it, but I would continue to see this and to be like, huh, and I would just watch over and over, and it was the thing where I loved just the ways of Jesus, but church didn't always completely make sense to me. And then eventually I, yeah, went into ministry because I was like, I can obviously do this differently. And then,
We all think that, don't we? Oh, I'm going to be the one to change the world.
I've got the magic sauce. And so going through ministry, it was always kind of trying to find the right fit, where I really felt like, because I would find inconsistencies in these denominations where they didn't really care about reaching people that they'd like to talk about. And then so I would move to working for a different denomination and try this. And so trying different tribes, I worked for an evangelistic organization as well too. And really what began to, what I think I'd been deconstructing for a while because I was just questioning stuff. And it wasn't out of being wanting to cause problems or anything. It was really just out of curiosity of wanting to know more. Like this doesn't seem to make sense to me. Like we're evangelizing like crazy, but what are we inviting people into? We're just really trying to get them to pray a prayer, check a box, and move on. And I was like, that's not the gospel. That's what is this? And I think what really broke my back, which towards deconstruction, it was the total straw that broke the camel's back for me, was seminary. And I absolutely loved it. And it absolutely ruined me for ministry. And it was great. It was wonderful going through that, but it told me at the same time, I was like, nope, I can't keep doing this if I'm gonna be sincere. And so that kind of, I think, deconstruction, deconstructed me out of being in ministry. But I just kind of kept walking and kept going because I was still curious. I'm still trying to find answers as
How
well.
did your family respond to you deconstructing? How did that go for you? What did that look like for you?
Luckily, like for me, like personally, like my wife and I, we were walking through it. We kind of were, she'd be ahead of me a little ways deconstructing, then I'd be ahead of her. And it was just kind of, there was a shuffle between us. There was lots of conversations, lots of questions. Raising kids in it was interesting, as well too, because, when you're still working for churches, you still kind of have to, you're trying to figure out what you're doing. And I remember like when our kids were younger, like my wife and I had gotten into a phase where we would be driving home from church and we would start yelling. Like we would get in these conversations because we were so mad about what we had listened to. Like the sermons, because we're like, oh, this is just, it's infuriating. And our kids like asked us, they're like, Mom and Dad, are you guys getting divorced? And it was just like,
Oh
oh no, oh my gosh, no. We were just so
no.
angry because none of this makes sense to us. This is just all bullshit. And but I think family at large, no. I don't think completely understood it, deconstructing and walking that way, but you just have to
They
keep
don't.
going. Keep
A
going.
lot of them don't. Did you deconstruct completely from Christianity, or did you deconstruct to a different version of what you felt was your truths?
I find, like, for me, I feel like deconstruction is, for me, will be a consistent process till the day I die. I feel like it's always just kind of trying to figure out where we're going, where we're at, what is true. What are the things that are feeding me? What is nourishing me? What do I need now? What don't I need anymore? So with that, it's for me, like institutional church. Yeah, I'm like, no, no,
Yes, I'm
no.
with you on that. I
But
am,
I still
yes.
feel attached to the ways of Christ, and I think feel like living that out. I feel like the conversation around this needs to continue. I think continuing to wrestle through the ways of Christ, I think matters, and I think also being in the space like you guys occupy, where it gives people that are having questions. It gives them vo a voice. It gives them words to be able to start to attach where they were at in a process when they started to go, does anybody else feel this way? Am I crazy? And
And
yeah.
that is so true, because when I was deconstructing what you said about language, is the hardest part of my indoctrination over 25 years has been the lack of the capabilities of articulating exactly what I'm thinking, seeing, feeling, thoughts. The questions, it's very difficult to say some of these questions out loud because you're so taught that you're not supposed to question God. You're supposed to have faith. You're supposed to do it this way, and this way. And then, it was always so downplayed that I realized that finding my voice just to ask questions out loud, get them out of the loop in my head, was scary. It was petrifying, because I'm like, oh, I am saying this out loud and the devil now knows. And you're asking questions that we were told that we were never allowed to entertain, right? So all of that stuff is so scary. And like even me and you, like we've said it before, when we first started deconstructing, there wasn't all these spaces and all these
Nothing.
conversations happening, And we even see it with people that come onto our show that are new to deconstructing. They don't have the language to articulate everything that they've been through because you can't even properly name your emotions a lot of the times coming out of high control religious spaces because you were told to suppress so much of that, So
And you were
that's
always,
another part of deconstructing is learning how to identify your emotions, connect with yourself.
And with that language thing, if you used too big of words, you were being haughty, you were being prideful. You weren't allowed to use words that you had to use like everyday words. I remember my pastor just like going crazy over somebody articulating and using big words. And he was like, "You're being prideful, you're being proud, you're not supposed to do this." And I remember as a little girl, like saying, "Oh, I won't ever w use that word again." And then it was like, what the heck?
But what a small man that is. You know what I mean? Like that
Yes.
he was just like somehow like a large word made him feel like, oh my gosh, I have to like shut this down.
And this is
And
a
that's oh,
child. Like a
I
child is making you feel that small. You need help, dude.
Oh my, yeah,
But
but how many churches are run by small men like
yes,
this? That
that's
that's
exactly
exactly
what it
it's
is.
like people think that everybody's not that, not all churches. And I know I paint it with a general brush
Sure,
sometimes,
sure,
right?
sure.
But when you get to these smaller, high-controlled religions, like I thought I was deconstructing because I went from apostolic Pentecostal cult to Word of Faith. I thought I had come a long way.
Hey, that is cult light, isn't it?
It is
Okay.
cult light. It
So,
is
okay. So there was a step down process. It
step
was,
down process.
You were detoxing.
Listen, it takes a
Or,
little bit to
ooh.
get all the way out, okay?
It's a
I
process.
don't
We have to
judge
walk it
how
through.
you get out. It's
Absolutely.
like, don't judge me today. You have no idea which ones I've been through.
So, what led you to writing the book, Stuart?
It was one, well, okay, the truth is I was putting off editing another book I'd written. Well, it was one of those things where it was a book I'd written and I was like, it's not, I understood it intellectually, but I don't think it was me enough yet. And so I put it off, and this one just started as me trying to think of like some trauma I'd had growing up and what was a way that I could kind of be able to make fun of it, that would be like I can write a book being like all of this stuff is illogical, it's irrational, and I could do it in that way, but I think that would close a lot of doors. And so I did it in this way to be able to give people some sort of a way to be able to laugh at the absurdity, that we grew up with. And this the whole book was just a small process of some, I guess it was me kind of really getting in touch with my trauma and some of the memories I grew up with, because it was like I remember the satanic panic of the 80s,
Oh my
you know,
goodness, yes.
and it was, and for me, it was, I had gone, it was like Christmas. I had gotten a He-Man, Castle Grayskull, and a bunch of He-Man toys. Well, then, like a month later, my mom hears all of these are like demonic portals,
Oh
and you know, to the
no.
afterworld, and it's like, hey, Christmas, gone, because we don't want demonic portals in this house.
Oh
And so there's
no.
lots of micro trauma that I know a lot of people have grown up with through this.
Yes.
Just the uncertainty, like, oh no, if I come home, what if mom and dad aren't there? What if they're raptured and not me? You know, that we were fed, and because it indoctrinates well, to make us like worried and afraid constantly, and it keeps us in a control situation. But all of this left
Absolutely.
scars. And so I think the book was a way to really be able to make fun of it.
Yes.
And yeah, put it to
And you
light and
did
show the absurdity.
a great job with it. Like I said earlier, like I was cracking up reading the thing because just the way you articulated things and like the clothes just laying around everywhere, because
Oh my
that was the
gosh.
one thing that they used to always tell us in church. Like there's just going to be naked people in the sky, which I don't understand why God had to take us butt naked. Like with the church being so obsessed with modesty, I never understood why we had to be naked to get raptured.
Well, because souls don't know. It's our soul being raptured. So we don't know that we've left our body. You know what I'm saying? So our bodies, I was always taught that our body would be down here just working and we would freeze. And the spirits would leave out of us.
See, I wasn't even told it the same way. I thought that we were all going to be naked, drifting up to heaven in our body and all. You were told
Yep.
that we were going to abandon our skin
It was just
suit.
like your Wi-Fi connection got cut, and then you're just dead. Yeah, that was it.
The
But isn't it interesting? Like, and these are almost, it's like conspiracy theories. Like when people
It is.
have to try to like make it make more sense, we come up with
Yes.
more nonsense to do this, and we're like, well, because it's already defying logic. So then we have to
Yes.
try to apply logic to something that is already nonsense to where, well, how would God
Exactly.
exactly do that? You know, would we have our clothes on or not? Or how, like, this whole thing, and I'm sure denominations would argue those two points.
Yes, and
Is
that's
it
why you
souls
would
or is
have
it
another
naked?
split, you know, that
Yeah.
just create another couple thousand denominations.
I
And you
know.
know what it did? Anytime you did something that you thought was sin, right? Or in a compromised position, if you were raised in these spaces, you instantly were like, oh, please forgive me, Jesus, for Yes.
what I'm about to
Yeah.
do,
Yes.
for what
Yeah.
I'm about to do, not what I'm
Yep.
doing, just in case he comes while I'm doing that. He knows I've
Yes.
asked for forgiveness first.
Yeah.
My brother was actually married to a pastor's wife and our pastor's daughter. And I remember her, we were riding down the car one day and she was talking about doing something. She said, I know Jesus won't like it if I do this, but I can just ask him to forgive me later. And I was like, what the hell's the point? Like, I'm like,
Yeah.
that's not how that works. Like,
I know.
what the heck, you know? And I was a pastor's kid too, but I didn't take Jesus like that. You know, I didn't take advantage of him. So I didn't understand that train of thought. I didn't understand. I was so naive that I didn't understand how manipulative Christians are. Like, I didn't
Well,
realize
yeah.
that actually that's more often the default setting than having compassion and empathy. I was a lot like you. It wasn't until I started studying the Bible because I want to know more so I can teach it better that I
But that's
learned what I
what I
learned,
just
and
did.
I couldn't unring
Exactly. Yeah.
the bell.
That's true. Yeah.
That's
So
what I just did with the 666 number, right? I'm like, wow. I'm like, I have never deconstructed that just because I thought it was absolutely ridiculous. Let me go down this rabbit hole today.
yeah.
It was
Yeah.
like 3 days ago. So I
Yeah.
started going down with the Emperor Nero and all of that stuff. And I'm like, Revelation is not a in the future prophecy.
Yeah.
It was talking about its day and
Yeah.
time.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
And
Exactly.
I think if I would have like looked at Revelations 10 years ago, I would have still been filtered eyes, right? But
Yep.
now it was like King Nero, 79 AD.
Yeah.
What, let's just line this all up. This was at the end of his,
Yep.
it was at the end of his emperor, you know, of
Yeah.
his time. They were talking about him because of the things that he did. And when you look at what the scriptures say about the end times, you could almost match it to what was
Yes.
happening in the Roman Empire,
Yeah.
Yeah.
and
If
if you
it's
wanted to.
and what's
It's almost like
wild
it's
is
not prophecy.
exactly. And it's wild because when you see this and you see it so plainly, it's so easy to see the way that you've been lied to and manipulated by people. And the reality is like my dad believes everything that he's preaching, even if he's not preaching gospel truth, he believes it, okay? I blame the people that taught it to him because he's just continued to sup at the table, you know? And he's such a puppet. Like he has went so far down that MAGA delusional, like I don't even recognize who my father is. Like I do not recognize him anymore because this theology has turned him into somebody that I don't even recognize because he's all about who he hates, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't understand that because this is the same man that taught me to die standing up for other people and taking care of them. You know what I'm saying? Like I was going to be martyred for my beliefs. So
Yeah.
that is what's so frustrating for me is seeing the people that I once believed were really good people and finding out they're really not that good after all. You know, they've been really manipulated and they justify a lot of really evil stuff and they use the Bible to justify that. And
And they
I
use
don't,
revelations
yeah,
to make
they
sure they
do.
prove, drive that point home.
Yes,
Well,
because
but because it gives them permission,
yes.
because they read it as like Jesus, it's like white American Jesus is going to kick ass and take names,
Yes.
and throw, you know, separate the sheep and the goats. So, you know, that gives me permission to be an asshole now, And because if, I know I'm a sheep.
Yes. So, and if we believe that Jesus is going to come back and save us, then we don't have to worry about helping our neighbors in the here and now, because God's going to take care of it.
Or the earth is going to burn.
Yeah. I mean, burn, all I have to do is say a prayer, and I don't have to lift a finger to help anyone. Mm-hmm. And I spent, you know, 36 years I was in religious spaces. I did not help people hardly at all. I have helped so many people since getting out of the church versus how many I ever helped when I was in it. And I think about that often, too, because, you know, we talk about loving our neighbors, but we never did it. We never went outside of the four walls of that church. We were always there. And even when we would have little events here and there, they would police who was allowed in certain parts of the church, and you're not allowed to let those people up in the sanctuary because we don't want them going up there. And I'm like, that's where the altar is. Like, you're opening up this church to the community, and you won't even let them up to the freaking altar? Like, they're not allowed to go be with God? I have a problem with that, because this is just a PR stunt at that point if you're not even letting them up there at the altar. And it wasn't just that church, you know, it was multiple churches. We had been in so many different ministries. Yeah. Like, my father was a pastor, so I have seen the inside and outside of it. My husband led worship for a while. Like, I preach. So we have been in so many different aspects of ministry, but they all function primarily the same. It's all about, you know, elevating the man of God that's above that house, and he is above reproach. You cannot critique him. You can't challenge anything he says behind that pulpit. If any of his behavior is inappropriate, you can't say anything about that, because you're taught, touch not God's anointed, right?
Do my prophets no harm.
And I have seen that type of environment create the perfect environment for abuse to go unchecked, you know, because when you've got it set up to where the system is more important than the people that it's hurting, we've got a problem, you know?
And especially if one person in the congregation says that they hear directly from God,
and
they give the word to you, that's also fuel to manipulate anybody.
I was reading my journal the other day, and I had written in it on January 12th, 1997, I had left my, I'd left the cult, and I was going to a United Pentecostal church across town, which was like a step down. And I was sitting in there, and I in the journal, I said, my daughter got the Holy Ghost under Brother Kyle, and she's this and that, and I'm like, but what am I going to do about my mom? Because my mom keeps telling my daughter, only Brother Evans can be your pastor. You only have one pastor. You can be saved under any other pastor. Now, mind you, my daughter is like four or five.
And it,
you know, that's a big deal for them to have the Holy Ghost back then as a child. But more... I was deconstructing without even knowing I was deconstructing because in the thing I said, I don't know how to make this with my mother. I don't know how to make this is okay because I'm not going to be able to raise my children here under this influence. I may believe in one God because, you know, I'm oneness of the Godhead, split of the United Pentecostal. We don't believe in the triune. I'm like, but I don't believe in one man. What am I going to do? Like I was still hanging on to the godness and oneness of the Godhead.
She's like, I believe in one God, but I don't believe in just one man to preach the God. And now she's like, I'm an anti-theist. I don't want nothing to do with it.
it just shows me what my thought process was then as a young mom of a child. Of my children, right? Because I was only like 24, 25 years old. So I'm so indoctrinated by what was going on about my daughter receiving the gift of the Holy Ghost and her getting baptized with Brother Kyle and Brother Kyle, you know, and then here's my mom. It was not good enough. You're only allowed to have one pastor, one husband, one minister, one Jesus. And I believed it.
And already as a mom, you're already like, I mean, I know as like as a young parent, we're already like worried that we're going to screw our kids up,
Oh,
and we
yes.
want to do like everything perfectly as possible. And then we
Yes.
have these outside sources being like, well,
Yep.
let me sow more doubt in here because
The level
that'll
of
keep you quiet.
holiness.
It was based on the level of holiness and the level of fear. Our church, with the United Pentecost Church may have been here, the UPC, right? Then the Apostolic Pentecostal like kicks it up like 10 or 20 notches because they're so much better. But even back then in 1997, I was like, there may be a God, but I don't believe in these men.
See, you go, girl. And they were the pastors of the church. Well, you had every right not to believe in those men, though, because you know how abusive they were, too. But, and I like, I kind of laugh when I think that I remember just meeting people back in the day and they would tell me that they weren't a Christian. And I used to think, oh, that's so sad.
I know.
And now I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Like, okay, that's awesome. What do you want to talk about?
I know,
Like,
because it turned us like we turned us into judgmental assholes
yes,
in the way
it
we looked at the
did.
world too. Like we were terrified at the same time,
Yes.
but we're also like smug
But
a
if you
bit,
told me
like,
you weren't a
you know.
Christian,
So
I thought you had the most
self-righteous.
miserable life ever. I thought that you could never know joy or peace or true love because you didn't have God within you, and God was the only one that could allow you to experience those things for yourself. And I look
And
at that stuff and I laugh because it's like you were so stupid.
just so you guys know, I never had a problem not being a Christian because I was raised that I was not a Christian. I was apostolic.
Oh, that's right.
So
That's
when
right.
people would say, oh, are you a Christian? I would respond, no, I'm
No,
apostolic.
apostolic.
People were like, yeah, but you believe. And I'm like, no, I'm apostolic. And I remember that being so like profound that I was so glad that I wasn't a Christian, that I was apostolic, that when I went outside the church, I was like, oh, everybody's supposed to be Christians. I was looking around going,
She's like, we were all Christians. Like,
Yeah.
I was a Christian too, just
God, I'm
didn't
not
know it better.
special. Oh my God, I'm in here with all the other court Christians. I'm
They
like
talk
one
about that a
of
lot. And that's the other thing they did, though. They had us all feeling like we were garbage, but we were special garbage. Like, we were better than the other garbage that was out there in the world. That still doesn't make sense to me, but we believed it. Like, I internalized that messaging so hard. Like, I still struggle with it, like self-worth is a big thing
Absolutely.
because that messaging, it just gets woven into who you are, right? So when you hear that messaging for that long, it takes a long time to undo that, like to retrain your brain to like tell yourself, yeah, you're not fundamentally broken at your core, right? Like, the messaging that you were taught was the thing that was fundamentally broken.
And the
So
best way to do it is through satire.
absolutely,
That has
it really
always been
is.
my, when something happens, I openly like make fun of how I was raised and what I
Oh,
believe.
all the time.
I'm like, the amount of daily fuckery, if you go on Instagram and scroll Pentecostal type churches, and I didn't even know until this morning that Paula White is a part of the Word of Faith Rhema churches.
Oh,
Oh,
she's a
Lord.
nutter, but
I'm like, oh
That's
my God.
crazy.
That's part of
And
Paula
she
White
is
stuff.
just wild.
Oh,
Like, I
she's
love.
all-star. She's like all-star level, like grifter though. Like she's
Oh,
up
she
there.
is. She is, man. She
She knows
is.
how to get her bag.
Yes, she does. And it's wild because like she is so hated that she's literally hated by Christians and atheists alike. Because the Christians that hate women, they hate her.
I
Like,
know.
women are not supposed to be preaching and teaching. And then you have the other Christians that just see her for the charlatan that she is, right?
Oh
So she
gosh,
gets called out for that, being a grifter. But I'm just like, wow, it's so blatantly obvious that she's a crook. Like, it doesn't even take that much research to prove that she's a crook with the divorces and the scandals and everything else. And I'm just like, how is this possible, right? How is it that the worst people to preach the gospel have the biggest platforms? I don't understand it. Why is it the Mark Driscolls of the world and the Sean Foyts that, have these platforms, But it's because they're saying everything that, they need them to say.
No,
Yeah,
why do we
it,
fall for it? Just
but
average people, we get caught up. I was like all about Word of Faith. You know what I'm
yeah.
saying? You get so caught up in these mega churches and being a part of something bigger. And then whenever you actually look at it, you're like, this whole place is satire. This is
Yeah.
ridiculous. It's like a production. It's
It's
like
the
a
same way with
show.
Bethel Church. Like, I used to love Bethel. Like, I was hardcore into Bethel, like all their worship music, would listen to all these sermons and stuff like that. And then, in, recent years, they've had all the scandals and stuff come out about the things that they have covered up. And, one of their ministers was literally, his whole ministry was built on lies. And they knew like over 10 years ago, and all they did is cover it up. Like, they didn't want it to get out because they didn't want it hurt their prophecy ministry
It is. It's
that
a
they
brand.
offer. Yeah. And
It's a
it
brand.
didn't
Yeah.
want to hurt their brand. Yeah.
As a minister, how did other ministers and first ladies of the church react? And how do they react now to your book and stuff? What, I mean,
Yeah.
like, are they, how do I say it? I know a lot of ministers that have been doing this for so long. They don't believe it. They're just doing it. They're like, listen, what else am I going to do to, how else am I going to provide for my family? I've
Yeah,
been
that's
doing
true.
this forever, right?
Yeah.
So I'm wondering because in our churches, a lot of times when we're a minister in ministry, we become a part of these like hierarchy cliques. How did the ministry teach you? How did your denomination, and if you don't mind sharing, what was your denomination and how has this affected, how did the book affect everybody else around you? Because I know you still have to have minister friends.
I do. I don't know. I think me being myself kind of it like I never burned bridges, but I think some people would feel that way just by me being myself. I mean,
Yeah.
denominations, I've worked for Southern Baptist, Foursquare, United Methodist, Churches of God General Conference, but not that's not the charismatic one. And I've worked for and it's
Why do we do this? We like,
that's the woo hands.
I
It's like jazz hands, but I guess it's like charismatic hands.
know.
No, working in that, I mean, I think for me, it was what I've seen is that a lot of these systems, we reward leaders that are narcissists. And
Absolutely.
the systems that we've set up reward that kind of personality type,
Yes.
to be put in that place. And it rewards it. The followers like it. And so the church systems that we have now, the way a lot of the institutions are set up, they reward that.
Yeah.
And we continue to get be surprised by like, oh, what? A narcissist is going to what? It's going to abuse people. It's going to treat people poorly. There's going to be all these bad things happening. And in the church, but it's a machine now. And we don't ever question
Yes.
like the mechanisms and how it moves and how it works
Well
and the
oiled.
systems.
That's
We
actually
don't question
that
it.
I'm actually on my blog right now. I'm writing the, it's called The Machine, but it's naming the mechanisms of patriarchy and what keeps it in motion, right? Because it is a freaking machine and there's all these different parts, and naming those different parts is so important. Having these conversations, because that's how we expose it. You cannot tear it down without exposing it for what it really is. And I think that's the one beautiful thing about your book and all these different resources that we now have. I say this every time we have people on that have written something or put something out there, but this is stuff that is out there to help people to see things differently and in a way that they may not have seen them before. And we may be reaching people that we don't even know that we're reaching, When I talk to people all the time where, they'll have an encounter with somebody and like a small encounter can literally change their life. Picking up a book can change somebody's life. So, I think it's so valuable having all these things out there because we don't know who we're reaching, but I just really happy that there is hope and knowing that people are seeing, the light and we are talking about it and we are exposing this for what it is. And we always ask people that are on our show.
I have a
So,
question for
oh,
him
go
too,
ahead.
so
Go
don't
ahead.
let me forget.
No, you ask your
I have to
question.
ask you because you've deconstructed and you had children. I'm
Yeah.
sure they're like starting to get older now. As a mom now that my children are in their young 30s and stuff, right? I've asked them in an open letter to each of them to be a part of my deconstructing journey because I'm documenting it. And I realized that the parents who do the work or the first ones who decide to start deconstructing, that is not just my journey. That is not just something that I stop and to say I'm going to go by. That affects everybody that is in your close circle. Or your close net, my children, in this incident, and each of them have watched me deconstruct and have come out at a different place and feel a different way. But I didn't realize that they had so many thoughts about my journey until I asked them. So, how do you approach your children? Are they young? Are they older? Where are they at? And how do you approach them when it comes to, religion and God and all of those things? Because they saw me growing up being like so profoundly dedicated and devoted to now kind of being an anti-theist and saying, agree with me. And it
Well,
does make a big difference. You know what I'm saying? They're like,
yeah.
and they love the fact that it's liberating for me. I have two children, two boys that are atheist and probably Norse pagans, but they're more out there. And I have a daughter who was raised in it the longest, who has chosen to be non-denominational and a part of the evangelical churches. So
Yeah.
that's a
No, it's not. I think for us, like, so I got four kids. Youngest is
didn't
18.
believe in TV.
Is no, when we raised them, we kind of raised them in an odd way to where we were always really honest with them,
Yes,
behind the
us
scenes.
too.
So there was
Us
lots of
too.
the conversations where we were always just like, okay, here's what I'm going to tell you is true, but you cannot repeat this at church. So there's certain things like that. It was like,
I
it's like we were
love
like
that.
telling them the bad stuff, but
Yes.
we always wanted them to be able to question and to just understand who they were. And so I think so we didn't do it perfectly. I think we were
No.
stumbling through our process and
Yep.
in some middle part of our deconstruction, but we always tried to keep it really open and conversational. And so I think that they've just evolved kind of like we have as well too.
Yeah, I
Taken
love that.
a lot of what we had and what we were teaching them, but we were really just trying to get the heart of stuff, not like I need them
Yeah.
to memorize all of the scripture. My whole
Yes.
point was like I need them to understand what this is really about or like what it
Yes.
leads us to, because I can memorize the whole Bible and it doesn't feed a single person.
Yep. Yes.
It feeds my soul, but bullshit. It does. It's not
No.
feeding my soul if it's not leading me to go feed and help other people. So,
Yes, exactly.
It's like
yeah.
at the end of the day, what does it matter if I can say Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Acts, Romans, 1st and 2nd Corinthians, Galatians, Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians, 1st and 2nd Thessalonians? I don't even know popular songs, but I know every book of a Bible.
But it made us feel so good.
Oh,
For
it
what
did.
reason? For what
Yes,
reason? It's so
exactly.
ridiculous.
And it made us feel good to be able
Impressed
to
that I know
argue
every book
it,
of the
to be able
Bible.
to
You
cite
weren't
it.
impressed?
And the thing is, though, is the only people you can flex in front of with that is other believers because the other people in the world think you're stupid as hell.
Yeah, I know.
So I apologize to the rest of the world that my host just called me stupid as hell because I know all the books of the Bible.
She said it in
Listen,
love. She said it in love.
I did.
Totally
I
love
said, I
that.
love you. So, Stuart,
I'm
if
sorry.
somebody was just now starting their deconstruction journey, what
Oof.
kind of advice would you offer to them?
Be patient with yourself. Really, just really, really be patient with yourself. And I
Could you
let,
break that down? Can you give us a little bit of satire to help us out with
yeah.
that
I
one?
mean, I
You
think
can roast
it's
yourself. It's
it is
okay.
it's like learning a new skill.
Cathartic.
Like it's oddly enough, like it's yeah, taking things apart, it's like learning to ride a bike, I think.
Yeah.
And after we've done something for so long, we can get very frustrated
Yep.
with unlearning things,
Yeah.
especially when it'd be easier for me to keep learning nonsense in the system I was in, but to unlearn those things, it's hard. And I think I would just say, yeah, I said be patient, because it's going to be a journey, but I think it's a good one. And let your because I think at the point when a lot of people are start deconstructing, I don't think they're there to they're able to trust their gut enough at the
Yeah.
very beginning. So the thing I would always say is follow your curiosity.
Yes.
God,
Yes.
that's always,
That may be
and that
easier
comes
than the
up
gut.
all
Yeah,
the
yeah.
time because curiosity is literally the main thing that continues to spark and fuel deconstruction. And it's why they kill it so quickly in
Yeah.
religious spaces. It's
Yeah.
why they tell you not to ask questions and they make you afraid to ask them. Because if we can control your curiosity, then we can control you.
Yeah. Yeah. And
Yes.
that curiosity may be stuff that
Yes.
has nothing to do with religion. You know,
Yes.
it may be nature, it could be anything, but it's just letting yourself be free to do those things.
Yes. It
In
literally
order to
can
be
just be like asking questions about alcohol that you have been told your whole life that was going to kill you if you took a sip of it, right? Like, you
I'm
know,
not dead yet.
and
Just kidding.
exactly.
I'm just saying that, I was raised teetotalers, no alcohol,
Yes.
TV, computers, there was nothing.
Yeah.
So every time I do something, I'm like, well, that didn't kill me.
I haven't made it to
No.
hell yet.
I
I do know, though, if I
seems
show
like,
up, I'm going to be in good
yeah.
company.
Right. It's like
Yeah.
going to a movie theater for the first time. When I walked out, I was like, well, I'm not dead.
Yeah.
Bowling alley? What? It didn't kill
It was The
me?
Lion King, wasn't it? Your first movie? That
Oh
was
my
her first
God.
movie in the theater, was The
Oh,
Lion
my
King.
first movie in the theater, and to this day, I have to tell you that it's still the scariest movie I ever watched, was Lion King.
If you've never seen anything like that before, it absolutely, I mean, I
Yeah.
can totally see that. Yeah. Yeah.
Never. I was like
Yeah.
27 years old and I went into a theater by
Oh,
myself before
wow.
my without my kids, right? So I like snuck in and I was like sitting there. I was like crying. I was like, oh my God, I'm The Lion King.
I'm sorry,
And
T.
you're
I
like,
get it.
I can feel the love tonight. You know,
But
yeah.
I'm horrified all at the
Yeah.
same
And you
time.
guys, when I walked out of that theater, I was like, I didn't die or go to hell.
Yeah.
It's better to ask for forgiveness than it is to ask permission.
That's right. Amen. Amen.
See, that's your advice
Amen.
for today, everybody.
Yeah.
Well,
And go
Stuart,
watch Lion King. It's
yes, go
fine.
on.
You're
Yeah,
good.
watch and read Stuart's book.
That's right. Yeah.
Anyway, thank you so much for
Thank
hanging
you.
out with us, you know,
Absolutely. So
chatting
much
about your
fun.
book. As always, you know, if you guys enjoyed this episode, please hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode. I'm definitely going to leave Stuart's links in our show notes so you can find him and check out his book. It's really funny and he's a really cool dude and we're grateful for him to be here.
Yes. And
Thank you
thank
so
you.
much.
It's always so amazing and wonderful to read to do this podcast and see different perspectives and be able to learn and heal and know that other people took the same tools that we may have took or not the
Yeah.
same tools. But definitely I love satire because I love not making fun like putting the religion down, but in the perspective of I was once there.
Yes,
This
yes.
is what I did. And a
Yep.
lot of times I question it now, like, oh my God, will I still go to hell about stuff? You know, the internal loop, right?
Yes.
And I was like,
Yes.
leave the house dirty. Open those
Yes.
closet doors.
We are rebels now
Absolutely.
because we're the
Feral.
awakening.
But thank you. And I am definitely putting your book on my list, and I hope our listeners will too. And I can't wait to enjoy and read the whole book. But thank you today for joining us. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. And if people want to know this too, there's also a coloring book that is out for this
Oh my gosh,
as
I
well
didn't
too.
know you had a coloring book. That is so freaking cool. I'm gonna
So,
have to get that now.
and
Oh my
it
God, I'm a coloring book person. I got
it
them stacked next to my bed.
well, it just to tell you, it takes all of the tribulation scriptures and makes it look cute. Like this one, I saw when the lamb opened one of the seals. And if you can see it, it's a lamb opening a seal with a
Okay, I
knife.
gotta.
So yeah. So
I
you get
have to
the
have that. I'm
Okay, so
gonna have
yes.
to order that. We are
Coloring
putting
books
it
are
in the
fun too,
notes.
so yeah.
I'm
I
very
love it,
sorry,
Stuart.
Stuart, that I just went crazy over your coloring book and not that crazy over your rule book, but now I've got to get the coloring book.
No, because it's dark humor
Either
and it's
works.
right up
Yeah.
our alley, so it's
Yeah.
perfect. Thank you.
Yeah.
This is a lot of fun. Thank you so much. And can we
Absolutely.
get that on Amazon?
Absolutely. You can find it on
Absolutely.
Amazon. Yeah.
Yep.
Guess where I'm going?
Thank you. Religion has many victims, and these are the stories of how they survived.
The preceding podcast is solely owned by the host or hosts and is distributed by Big Media LLC. Copyright 2026.